that was taken to go to Corinth is precisely informed by the provincial Brazilian provincial federation in order, because they themselves in their own capacity organize those events. If the Irish British Lions go to KwaZulu-Natal, the chap gets involved in organizing it. So is the cheetahs and all the sports. The provincial union, there is no way that you'll be able to put them aside. Because even they're playing this after Super 40 of theirs. And therefore, it is going to be highly impossible to exclude them. But like we said when we started, we must do it legally, we must say in the text. Provinces are required, like we have done with the Sports Amendment Act. And provinces are required to create their own or introduce their bill that is going to be in compliance with the national bill and order, like we have done. Remember that decision, because we didn't want to go on section 70-60. Wanted to go on one section so that it might create a space for them as provinces to be able to kick in their own being in the approach. So tomorrow will not be in a position to be. And the submission story from now, I'm going to make a photocopy of those submissions and bind them and give them to all political parties. And then today, yes, tomorrow you will get them, and then you will read them at home and all that. The following day, is then that we will consider those submissions and all that. If we can finish on Thursday by 5 o'clock with those submissions, it means on a Friday, we are likely to have a free day, and then we'll meet on a Monday the following week. But it will depend on what the program says. So I would like us to push a little bit harder on a Thursday, so that I must allow members a room to go home on a Friday. Otherwise, we will be locked not to go home on a Friday, because we're going to finish late, and then my door will never see the Northwest.
Susan, can we not start the practice tomorrow, even if it's in the afternoon? So we definitely should finish on Thursday.
That's why I say you must make copies. As soon as it's ready with a copy, I am going to phone all of you partners. But now it is not done copies, it's easier, so it's going to do copies for all of us, including the lawyers, and then so that when we talk about this, in the meantime, Sirius is going to do a lot of work to make reference and check what the comments of those people are. Other submissions are going to be oral, but people are going to come and present to the committee. But we'll try to do that. Sirius? I think we'll give it over to you.
Thank you, Chief Wilson. We find you with a safety certificate. To provide for the application and issue of the following categories of safety certificates. Now you will see the two bodies. First is the local authority. The local authority is going to issue general safety certificates for existing stadiums or venues. The local authority is also going to issue safety certificates for new stadiums. The local authority will issue safety certificates for planned alteration and extension to existing stadiums. In addition to the above, local authorities will issue grading certificates. Now, either a high, medium, or low risk event hosting capability. Now, you must distinguish between the categorization of an event, which can be high, medium, or low, then as opposed to or relative to the grading certificate, which has an impact on the event hosting capability of that particular stadium or venue. In other words, in what way can it absorb or accommodate, you know, the event categorized as a high-risk event, for instance, to be held at its venue or stadium. Then the National Commission, you can see, there's only one certificate that he's going to issue. That is the high-risk event safety certificate. Existing stadiums and venue safety certificates is the first one issued by the local authority. It provides for the administrative processes, Honourable Chair and members, in respect of the annual application to local authorities and issuing of safety certificates for existing stadiums or venues by stadium or venue owners. The bill provides for a phasing in period in respect of existing stadiums or venues to comply with the technical provisions of the bill. We have now arranged that in the case of a high risk event, the stadium or venue owner will have, for instance, 2 years to comply with all requirements in terms of this particular legislation, and 3 years will be allowed in the case of a medium categorized risk event, and 5 years for a low risk event. So this depends obviously on the risk rating of the stadium and venue.
Can you repeat that? Because somebody's got an interest in those penalties and the grading and all that. Can you just repeat that?
Sure, Chair. The bill provides for a phasing in period. Because remember, a lot of people were complaining and saying that, you know, if this bill commences, it's like a landslide of provisions being dumped onto us. How would we be able to comply with it? So we've now arranged by drafting it in such a way that you will have, in the case of a high-risk event, 2 years after the commencement of the particular act to comply with all provisions contained in the act when promulgated, or 3 years in the case of a medium event risk, or 5 years in the case of a low event risk, as from the date of the commencement of the act, in order to comply with all the requirements of the particular legislation.
What is it that makes people to say it must be faced in that way? What is this responsibility that they're going to carry? That warrants such a spending thereon. Because if you are kidnapping and then you face an event in Paris, what is this that is needed from you? Because already you have the marshals, you have everything that is running, and then you rather say there are other keeping issues that you want to deal with them. But I want to know, what is this reason that they are raising that you must face it for 2 years, 3 years, and 5 years? I want to get that reason. Yes,
I just want to check with the region as to on issues of certificates being issued by local authorities, but I'm checking here that a number of stadia in rural areas are owned by local authorities. I'm trying to check on the safety standard of it, who is going to ensure that when it's in actual fact the person who owns the stadia, is the one again who issues the certificate. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, for instance, they are in the bowl. There are references, for instance, with regard to provisional risk categorization. A controlling body must within 6 months before the start of the calendar or a season submit its list of annual schedule of events to take place. In other words, in order to absorb that provision, that type of provision, for instance, just to cite an example, you need to set certain phases in order to create a proper flow of activities and requirements, compliance to those requirements in terms of the bill. So, and then another example would be where it says for existing stadiums, I think it says within 3 months after the commencement of the bowl, a stadium or venue owner must apply for a safety certificate. So in other words, again, to accommodate that. But this is just an example. But there are many other examples which we can go through. You know, it's going to take it's going to be very time consuming. But in order but then we say 2 years have expired in the event of a high risk event. Then you, as the state of any owner, will have to comply with all the requirements as contained. You give an adequate leeway for you to comply, but once it's reached, it's final, then you're actually out of bounds. You're out of order when it comes to the requirements of the Act. And then you couldn't be held accountable. And this, we believe, is, Chairperson and Honourable Members, is a very reasonable timeline to comply. Let's just cite, for instance, this is a hypothetical example, but I think it would illustrate my point. In that, say for instance, this bill could have been promulgated 2 years ago. Because remember, and 2010 is now 2 years still ahead of us. Meaning that FIFA would have, because all the events will be categorized as high-risk events, just due to the nature of it, and other requirements, because it will be both. It means then that FIFA would have had 2 years then to comply. And now this is a heavy burden then on FIFA. But now, as things are now, if this bill gets passed by Parliament, say, March or April next year, the 2 year phase is going to be, for all practical purposes, would not materialize, because the event will be long gone, already completed, whilst the provision of the Act for the high risk event kicks into force. So it's going to have no, it's going to have no legal effect, for instance, on FIFA, because it's going to have to have a bearing on it retrospectively. And in law, they have assumptions against the retrospectivity. So therefore, just to cite an example, so therefore the 2 year period is a phasing period, and it involves all the requirements. You know, if you go through that, you're going to be here for the whole next week.
If I may, Chair, just to emphasize what Gideon has said, the phasing in period relates to infrastructure. That's the long and the short of it. It relates to providing stakeholders with sufficient time in the rural areas and other areas to upgrade the facilities in line with basic technical requirements and safety requirements relating to those areas. The operational aspects, which you alluded to a few moments ago, relating to a big derby match, for instance, the security officers, the stewards, etc., become, and the event safety and security planning committee, are immediately implementable.
I think the member's question really was, where the owner of the stadium is the local authority, and the local authority is also the issuer of the certificate, the safety certificate. To us, and to me as a layman, it's a conflict of interest. So will they then be allowed to issue a safety certificate on their own property?
Honourable Chairman, if I may just respond to that, the local authorities are bound by the National Building Regulation Act, which sets out objective standards for instance, houses or other buildings, etc. So if they do issue that safety certificate, it will be based on those regulations, and they will have to comply with all the objective regulations in that.
But issued by the owner of the stadium in compliance with the existing regulations. Mm. Okay. But do you see the legal problem of that?
Yeah.
I will not go to my own testing ground and drive and take out my car for roadway. Mm. But if there's somebody, it's easy for him to write off my car for roadwayness, because it's another person. But if it is me, I cannot do that to order it to my own car.
No, I agree with that, Chairman. I think that the situation is where the local authorities, for instance, build, where they build a building for themselves. They also approve of the plans, and they also have their own inspectors inspecting their own buildings. Or they will at least check up on the contractors. But I hear what the committee is saying in this regard.
Right, so let's go on. You remember the building that has fallen in Joburg? You remember? Yeah, and another one in Cape Town, the building.
The building.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Because the owner of the building and all that, he was doing those things for himself. There was no any other person would come and look at the structure and standards and all that. So that is what has caused that. And then people died when that building falls. So it's okay.
If it's on my, we have a look at this. Third bullet on this slide, certificates must be accompanied by a separate grading certificate issued by the local authority, which determines two things: the safe spectator capacity of the stadium or venue, and secondly, the level of event risk, either it's low, medium, or high, that may be hosted at such a stadium or venue. Then with regard to new stadium and venue design safety certificates, this particular provision provides for the administrative process in respect of the annual application to local authorities and the issuing of safety certificates for prime stadiums and venues by stadium or venue owner. A stadium or venue owner must comply with the following: the local authority safety and security requirements or conditions that set out in the certificate, because each and every certificate will have attached to it certain conditions and terms, requirements. Secondly, the stadium venue owner will have to apply with applicable national and local authority building legislation and South African Bureau of Standards building design guidelines. Thirdly, the stadium venue owner will have to comply with applicable stadium venue technical requirements of international controlling bodies, as named there. Then also, the stadium or venue owner will have to comply with applicable national, provincial, or local medical facility requirements and any other prescribed criteria. In a nutshell, that is what these certificates are actually all about. Then we have, for instance, the certificates for alterations or extensions to stadiums. This clause provides for the administrative process in respect of intended alterations, existing stadiums or venues in possession of a safety certificate. The first have the safety certificate issued. Now, if the stadium owner wishes to extend or amend, alter or extend, his, in other words, his stadium or venue, then the local authorities must take into account the following factors when it actually decides on this application: the certified safe capacity of the stadium or venue, the seating design of the stadium or venue, the spectator turnstiles of the stadium, the emergency access and egress routes, okay, inside the stadium or venue, and their respective reasons, physical spectator barricading, traffic management planning inside and around the stadium or venue, whether the proposed alteration will affect the safety and security of persons at a stadium or venue. Once it has done that, the local authority may approve or reject an application. Then we come to the last form of certificate, which is the higher risk event safety certificate, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. It provides for the administrative process in respect of any event categorized as a high risk by the National Commissioner or the Minister for Sport and Recreation. You will recall that it's first a provisional categorization, then it's submitted to the Minister, and he makes a final recommendation, not a recommendation, approval, with regard to such an application. Then the issuing of a high-risk event safety certificate by the National Commissioner may be subject to compliance with certain conditions by the event organizer, which they will have to comply with. So that is the add-on, and it can actually vary
from certificate to certificate. Then, Chairperson and Honourable Members, we have a clause dealing with content and amendment of safety certificates. It provides for the administrative mechanisms again, in respect of the issuing and amendment of safety certificate by either the local authority. Remember, you need to distinguish between the local authority that only deals with low or medium risk stadiums or venues, and the national commissioner, which only deals with high risk events only. So, in other words, when it comes to the amendment of those certificates, if it's a low or medium risk stadium or venue, the local authority will decide on amendments to that particular certificate if so applied to it. And the national commissioner, in the case of a high risk event, will only deal with applications having a bearing on that high risk event only. Then the conditions regarding these amendments may also be prescribed. Then we have...
Chairperson, from my side, in terms of certification, if a local authority is going to issue a certificate, must this, in terms of verification, assessment, must this local authority be then accredited to the SEBS, referring to the building that must be SEBS standards, must it be accredited body? So I'm talking now about ISO 2009 or whatever code the SEBS will apply.
Mm-hmm. Chairperson, yes, our bill actually reiterates the position that the stadium of any owner must comply with the applicable national and local authority building legislation and SABS building design guidelines. So if your new stadium, for instance, or venue, your design of, will not be approved unless it complies. It cannot be approved. That is what the bill provision actually states.
I'm referring to the municipality that is going to write out the certificate. There's no way that anyone can write out the certificate if it's not accredited to the so-called body, South African Bureau of Standards. And that is my concern.
Chairperson, the proposal is that an independent engineer should actually ascertain, whether the compliance has actually been reached or not. So it cannot be, in other words, it needs to be formally approved and first interrogated by the particular engineer. It's just a proposal.
The question that is asking is, if any other person has to be the issuer of a certificate, that person must be accredited by that organization of the State Bureau of Standards. Then that person does the job in accordance to those standards. But the saying, now, the municipality, if that engineer has to do that, will the engineer be accredited by the Bureau of Standards? Yes.
The response is absolutely yes. The engineer will have to be accredited in terms of criteria as dictated by the SABS for that matter. Chairperson, we move forward to inspectors. You will see the enforcement mechanism of the bill is this particular inspectorate. Then this inspectorate will fall under the auspices of the local authority. We actually propose this way in dealing with this matter, because we actually using existing infrastructure in order to restrict financial burdens on the state. The powers of these inspectors are tempered insofar as the constitutional safeguards are concerned. Inspections, as we say, are limited to business premises only, not like, for instance, that I have cited in the UK legislation. And the local authority must also then issue certificates of appointment to these inspectors. And these inspectors may, at some time or another, be accompanied at their request by a TAPS member or any other person reasonably required to assist in this regard. All persons present at an inspection must furnish assistance to an inspector or police official performing their functions in terms of the bill, and this is what the bill actually requires. The bill provides for stringent qualification criteria regarding the appointment of inspectors, particularly related to...
Here is the legal compliance. All persons present at an inspection must finish assistant and inspector, or they must help this person to deal with the job. Or they must create enabling conditions for this person to do the job. In any event, there's an obstruction of this person to do with this job, what happens?
If there is an obstruction, it will actually create an offence, Chairperson.
But there is, it is not there in the law.
Actually, there it is, because once we get to the offences and penalties section, Chair, it actually deals and has a bearing on this particular issue.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. The last bullet there, Chairperson and honourable members, the bill provides for stringent qualification criteria regarding the appointment of the inspectors, particularly related to the experience, integrity, and impartiality. Then we come to private events. As I've previously alluded to, the Minister of Sport and Recreation may, after consultation with the National Commissioner, may by notice in the Government Gazette exempt certain private events from the operation of the board. There should be an application and well motivated for the Minister to put him in a position to apply his mind to decide whether he's going to accept or reject the application.
What would he do?
What about, say, for instance, a funeral? I would say maybe a funeral is one example.
Am I wrong by funerals?
Or maybe once-off events will also be applicable to qualify for such an intention. Big weddings, yes. Another one, big wedding. Wedding.
Mr. Chairman,
that's indeed the risk that we try to point out earlier. We have to extend responsibility to the minister. He or she has to apply his mind about security. And I'm a bit concerned about the liability in the event of something going wrong where the minister is exempted investigation. I'm just too concerned that the minister should be protected. I'm not too sure that this will sufficiently protect the minister.
Thanks, Chairperson. My concern is more about civil liberties here. If one's starting to have to apply to hold a funeral for a large wedding, this is becoming very intrusive by the state, I would, of course. And I think we'd have serious concerns about that issue. I think that's probably taking it too far, to be honest. I guess it's very intrusive.
No, but I don't think that they're saying it should be. They're saying this event can be excluded by the minister, but after consultation with the national commissioner, because Madua and myself and many know that there are funerals where it's complete violence. When we went to FNB at the funeral of Comrade Kerr, We bent down to the road there, and then it was chaos there. And then the stadium too, there was chaos there. So there are things that can be very volatile. But we are saying the minister will not have the capacity. The minister can have probably that capacity, but the judgment of the minister on this might not be a correct judgment. And the responsibility here, it could be shifted from the minister to somewhere else. I think person who has a better judgment of the kind of a funeral that is like, if Donald Lee stays in KwaZulu-Natal, and this kind of killings of people there, those funerals are very electrified, and then people go there, carry AK-47. The funeral. Because now the Zingata people are dying on the other side, and the ANC people are dying on the other side, as we speak now. And that funeral might not just be an ordinary funeral that is going on. But now, here, my fear is that we are giving minister to carry this responsibility, and they might have an incorrect judgment. That judgment is going to cause him dear, because it's not equipped in can deal with that kind of a judgment. I think Gideon, sit on this one and check on this one. The concern that we have is that we are placing too much, especially on this private member state. That other one is fine. You can see it's going very well. But this one, any other thing can happen on this one. And the minister, because he has not issued out a notice to protect this, might have a problem. Or, in an event, he issued out and there's any other thing, it's a double-edged sword. So, let's look at it. The concern that the DG raised is my concern that I have around the role of the minister, in particular on this one. Yes, Donna?
Chairperson, and also what Rain raised is also very important to me. And it's about civil liberties too. You know, we want a free and civil society. And we want it's not all really for the state to sort of impose their will and impose their rule on people. But on the other hand, we must also not lose lives.
No. What we are saying should happen here, it's not a new thing. All those comrades that know that when we're burying some of the comrades there, they have to ask their permission. Because the security police and the police could quickly calculate the risk involved in that kind of a funeral. Not in all funerals that you're placing cumbersome responsibility. And even this one, Ms. McKenzie is right, but we are not putting too much responsibility to the society about this, but to say there are instances of these kind of events where whoever gives an authority must calculate and say, but this one, Boshoff's funeral, is not just an ordinary one. And there are most likely unintended consequences of this funeral. And the minister would say, give us the marshal, how many marshals you are going to have, and there should be no gun salute there. There should not be this and this and this and this and this and this. And then people comply to that kind of thing on that funeral, not in every funeral. That's what we're talking about here. In every funeral, then it would be very irresponsible. But again, it would be irresponsible for government not to do that. When those people are coming out of the trial there, the Buremach, if there is a one Buremach died there, you didn't have that, you couldn't go there. And they led it to a problem like they stormed the World Trade Center innocently in the World Trade Center. They went there with a compass, they stormed the World Trade Center. And all of us were shocked. We checked but you can't just leave it like that. But again, don't put responsibility on the minister. Just strike the balance and see what should we do. And especially
Professor, I just would like to add, we have a limitation of liability clause right at the end, more or less, of the legislation, stating that the ministers, both ministers, as well as the national commissioner and authorized member, they shall not be held accountable or liable on provision that they have actually conducted their business on a bona
or made a bona fide decision in this regard.
Yeah, that kind of a clause would be applicable here on this private event, because this private event, the bona fide is that there is a likelihood of not having problems here. But if there are no problems, you have issued out the permission, not knowing that there could be a major thing cropping up there. And therefore, you cannot be reliable, because really it was something out of completely your intention,
yeah,
or even your calculation. So that provision has to be part of this, so that it creates a soft landing for any other thing that would happen.
Also, the provision itself makes provision for a consultation process with the national commissioner. It's after consultation, so the minister has got to say whether he's going to adhere to the recommendations of the national commission. But still, there's a consultation that can actually put him in a position to apply his mind more properly and effectively make the correct decision in this regard. That is well. And it's offset against the limitation of liability clause as well. But perhaps if one can tie it more directly to the limitation clause, just as a...
It is more easier when you tie it directly to the limitation, because when you read this private event tied up with limitation, you can see immediately what is going on there. But there's nothing wrong in putting it that side, but I think it has an easier impact and sensibility when you tied it up here on this side, because it doesn't ask you to go anywhere else, because there it is found. I don't think the expert has a problem in what you are requesting.
Your message has come through loud and clear.
Yes, Mr. Madhu.
Chair, just one more side from my side. I want to ask Hirona a question with due respect. What is his personal view on this bill? Is it user-friendly? Does it speak to transformation? Is it in line with the Constitution? And I don't even want to mention the Freedom Charter that you're adopting in Clippies, but I'm really not comfortable with it. Really. Maybe we'll just answer in terms of what I think.
Chairperson, my personal view is that, you know, this piece of legislation fulfills or conforms to the Constitution Act of South Africa, 110%. We've actually got the clearance from the state law advisors in this regard as well. They will have a look at the legislation, especially from a constitutional perspective as well. And they have given us the go-ahead after a very thorough or long editing process which they follow in certifying the bill. So therefore, my personal take on the view is that it's very practical as well, because I have an issue with it was raised whether this bill is practical. I think first of all, it would be practical because it refers to the Judge Nwepe's findings and recommendations. And he has pronounced on issues that were at fault or omitted, totally omitted, stemming from the Alice Park soccer disaster. So therefore, if we now, in our endeavors to address those vacuums that existed during the Alice Park disaster, surely we have now a piece of legislation that can be, that is practical, because it seeks to address those shortcomings, and it actually makes it an offense if you fail to conform to the Act. So therefore, I think personally, my personal point of view, this Act is a reasonable Act, as I have reiterated, and it serves the purpose very well.
Comrade Madhu, I think the question is not a very relevant question. Not a very relevant, it's a very characterized question. But I think Gideon will know that when we're talking about there shall be comfort and security for all, and therefore that security is needed for those people who go and relax in those kind of events. But the practicability of the bill in the implementation, the portfolio committee has to be on the department and those that are going to implement this law. This is one piece of legislation that our oversight in how this law is translated into real implementation, it needs to be very clearly and it must be visible. Because we must check into those kind of things. So that in an event, we see those unintended consequences that are beginning to tick into your mind, we must be able to correct them immediately, because you would see that this is what I've been suspecting and therefore let us correct it. But as soon as we do, like all other acts, you can ask what are the challenges of the 2010 special measures bill, both of them. You will never get what is the challenge. The 2010 the Sports Amendment Act implemented, what are the issues and all that. You'll find that it's very, 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 very minimal. And then we have to play that role, because we cannot put an act. Let's talk about transformation, Commissioner Matlou, and the minister keep quiet and everything in the country is not transformed in business as usual. And we have given him the enabling legislation to deal with the core business of the Constitution and of the Act around the transformation. Clearly knows the pain that we've gone through when we're dealing with that bill. But that bill is far from being implemented in the manner in which ourselves we envisage. But it's fine. Yes, sir.
Yeah, one last question. Who's the author of the balloon transfer?
The drafter or the author?
Drafter.
I don't know who's the drafter, but this bill, the author, I would say, is Judge Mwepe, because these are his directives as the person who was doing an investigation. But the drafter of the bill, I thought, is Khidio. If I'm right.
Jefferson? No, you're actually not right.
Okay.
I've been lying the truth now. it's actually the four of us, Mr. Makabeni there, and Mr. Van der Walt and Mr. Ronan, but we've employed the services of Mr. Ronan because of his highly technical safety and security expertise. We do not have that, really. So therefore, a lot of the technical issues being contained in this bill have been consulted with Mr. Ronan, because we definitely do not have the know-how. So, but it's a concerted effort. The projection of the bill to the committee as we speak. And I think I'm the same with me.
Okay. Yes, Mr. McKenzie, can you present?
Yeah. Thanks, Chairperson. If I could just address this, the deeper we go into this document, I tend to agree with my colleague from the ID, is that it seems to be becoming very bureaucratic, and I'm concerned that liberties are being taken into account. Now, if this bill was aimed at the high-risk areas and the measures you put in place there, the permits you have to get and the certain regulations you have to meet and so on, I think I personally would be a lot more comfortable with that. But I think we're putting a lot of pressure on low-risk and medium-risk areas where that's not the real problem. You've summarized a list of events where there have been major disasters and problems, and none of them, to me, seem to be medium and low-risk areas. So, maybe we just top heavy enough. I can see the high risk theory. I mean, it's very clearly it's religious and football, if one looks at, but anywhere where there's going to be a big crowd or an emotional crowd, whether it's politically driven or whatever, those are high risk areas. But I think there is so much in the floodplains and rural areas where there is low and medium risk. And maybe this is just another bureaucratic thing we have to work through when it's not really saving lives, because lives haven't been endangered to any great extent from what you've given us anyway thus far. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. If I can respond to that, in terms of the risk categorization, the South African Police Service, we've done this for the last 10 years, but on an informal basis, and we have to rely on sometimes information that we have to go and seek for ourselves. This bill will enable us to make a distinction, because if it's a low-risk event, the responsibilities on the venue owner and on the organizer, etc., are really, I think, quite reasonable. There's low-risk events are basically minimum medical assistance, for instance, at the school rugby game, etc. So there won't be onerous provisions, low-risk events. Even most medium-risk events will, I think, be really will not be regulated to death, if I can put it that way. But where the problems arise are normally the provincial rugby games, the PSL soccer matches, and those are actually categorized as medium risk. They're not really, most of them are not high risk, some will be categorized. But I think the bureaucratic impact of the bill, if I may use your word, Honourable Member, is to enable the government or the state to sit in a position to say, look, we have to police this matter, we have to ensure that there are medical services available, etc., etc., in those cases where a repeat of the Alice Park or the Orkney disaster may occur. So your low-risk events are really not your school rugby matches or football matches or cricket matches. I don't think that will really be affected to the extent that one may gather from the first reading of the book.
But another important thing is that when you do legislation, you can't say, I only legislate for the high-risk area. You can't say that. When you do legislation, you do legislation, and then it is determined. As and end when the risk is diminishing, the lower the bureaucratic process is talking about.
Yeah.
As and when the risk becomes huge, and that person also becomes a huge responsibility. But it will not be correct, even in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, that we only legislate for COPE because it's got many members, and then for ID with two members, we don't legislate. You don't do that when you're dealing with it. A legislation becomes a legislation for all. If you're driving at 120, there is an abiding citizen kind of. But if you drive at 140, then you are the person who is beginning to now contravene the law. But you can't say somebody is driving a Toyota 1500, don't legislate for him, and then only legislate for my citizens. No, it will not be correct. So I think that the whole thrust of the legislation, you legislate across. And then the implementation of that, and even when you go to court and go and mitigate the extenuating circumstances and all that, it depends how your case you present, and so that at least there were no malicious intention, and therefore I just point you with a finger, don't do it again. But I think for what the Honourable Member McKenzie is raising is right. I think your dilemma, you can't legislate for high risk events, and then you don't legislate across. That's your problem of the law.
If I might. And the point is well made.
Yes.
And I think even so myself, coming from the private sector, I understand exactly where you're coming from. But what we have attempted to do, this scheme of ours, is to build in safeguards so you don't have overreaching provisions. And I will tell you, for example, we spoke about about the phasing in provisions on the infrastructure relating to high, medium, and low. If you look at Section 18, you'll see with regard to the venue operation centre, which is, you know, can be quite burdensome, it says quite clearly that the BOC commander, which is a staff official, can say, we don't need it for this particular event. It spells it out there. Likewise with accreditation, it's only if it is required by the event organiser or by the state, being a high-risk event. So if you when you go through it and you look at the different provisions, you'll see that those safeguards that you refer to have been built in. Because I agree with you, it would be completely overreaching to have all sorts of these high-risk measures applicable to a schoolboy soccer match or festival. So we certainly did bear that in mind.
We've spoken about this morning too, but we mentioned it in part time.
It's about the responsibility of the different spheres of government. The DG spoke about the minister's involvement and his responsibility. The fact that he feels uncomfortable with certain responsibilities. Now, we must remember things are also going to happen in the provinces. Now, I want to know whether the MEPs, whether they are also going to have a role to play in the section that they
asking why the MEC are going to have a role in affecting this legislation or what is going to be the situation?
The chairperson, my take on this is that this is a national piece of legislation. It affects the national interest. But nothing debars the MEC to create, for instance, similar type of legislation within the jurisdiction of its domain. And that will be my response. In other words, because this piece of legislation, like the South African Boxing Act, it seeks to address, to maintain the essential standards in terms of the Constitution Act.
Hey, don't talk about boxing.
Some other sport.
Talk about health, other animals. Not boxing.
Yeah, so I rest my case. Thank you.
And don't talk about boxing. Now you make us not to go out of this. So I would ask you to go on, please. Let's go boxing. You remember, in I got a surprise during the budget. We agree with somebody that no, the budget is fine. And then we promised him that, look, we are going to request the minister to do certain things about boxing. Hey, boxing must cause me problems there. So I don't want to talk about it then. Let's go to another.
Chairperson, the next slide is the Event Safety Security Planning Committee. So remember, we said to this, they perform one of the main tasks in the country.
The private facility that I went to, that in fact I use even now at the stage. How do you use those private facilities and then how are they used? Because I have a view that you're using a private security to a public plane. And then again, some of those police. Let me give you, in Port Elizabeth, the very same security people were the ones that had a gun to go and rob the bottle store there at the stadium. And the safety of the stadium is amazing, the safety of the stadium. Now, and I have been, we have been, all of us, consistent that the private security, where is Matua? He's sleeping now, and I want to talk about his private security. The private security, I'm not taking through all the processes and the clearance and make sure that, in my view,
And the question of using the private security is making them feel very much uncomfortable. Not that we want to close your business, and it's very much uncomfortable because people are not taking a reasonable precautionary measure of the process in which we have to clear those people to go to public. That's private security. Now, how do you, in this case, where even the private security have to be part of the contingent, because you can't deploy the police all over in at the FNB and everything. You have to do what you have done with the Fourth Amendment Act, where you bring in the private security or the marshal, and then you have somebody who supervises them, or a certain level of authority is given to them and all that. But it must be a process of these, I'm sure. And then there are people who are not going to cause a problem. Now, how are these people executed here? And then, in this case, are you going to make them to go through a proper process of clearance for them to be the security? Is it going to be a requirement? Because in Rupert and during the Confederation, private security was used.
Honourable Chairman, the situation at the moment in most cases is that the private security is either preventive part of what's inside the stadium, for instance, to block the feet from trailers trying to jump over the barriers, and they also work at the ticketing point, etc., where the traditional police can prevent crime. They also will have people inside and the police inside the stadium. If there's a crowd management problem and violence breaks up to handle that and other crime intelligence matters, and then the police was outside to enforce once again crime prevention patrols, etc., traffic management, and to ensure that the correct people enter through the correct.
So you don't give those private security a high profile type of a job.
The private security normally do not have a high profile type of job, but honorable chairman brings. They have to sit also on that in the safety and security planning committee, and this is happening at the moment. That their controllers sit on that committee, and the police force know exactly where they are deployed and what they are doing. And then, especially with relating to the conflict cup and the World Cup, as you will know, the private security may only use the towers.
Because in closing, there is a biasness in using the private security police, even the private security, even the 20th. The one in Zufadem was just a drive, a test, and then it was successful. The inclination is that there is a likelihood of more of the private security during the 2010 World Cup. But it doesn't discard what you're saying. I'm just saying to you, you must know that that kind of a thing happens. Because if no pandemic was successful, and then shortcomings and all other things are going to correct those things, but there is that 80% chance of using private security and then coupled with the police. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. And again, amplifying what you said, I think we're going to be all honest with each other. Over the years that have been, and just as the Metro picked it up with the smart disaster, was the use of unregistered security officers.
Mm-hmm.
Persons who have not been registered and screened for criminal records in terms of the Private Security Industry Regulation Act. And you will see in this legislation, through the definitions clauses, throughout this legislation, and there's even an offence relating to the deployment in this legislation, the deployment of persons who aren't registered. This has often been done to save money, to use people who aren't registered so they won't have to pay people the lawful wages in terms of the wage determination. And I think we've really made an attempt to deal with that particular issue. And I'm certain, although I can't speak for the fact, if you look closely at the situation in Nelson Mandela Bay, it would be interesting to see whether the security officers were involved were indeed registered as security officers.
Right, but now you've answered me now. Those are things that members just want to get clear. So you've answered me, okay. You can move forward.
Examples of
South Africa is well known that. For example, that we have a vending operations center, commonly known as the box. This is the nerve center of any proper safety security delivery at an event. Our goal provides for the establishment first and foremost of the box. It can be either permanent or temporary. The goal also provides for the responsibility for the establishment of the box, which is the stadium or venue owner, in case of stadium or venue, and the event organizer in the case of an event along the route. The event is received the responsibility. The ESSC may approve box exemptions. In exceptional circumstances, you might not have a box, but it needs to be approved by the ESSC. Like for instance, low risk events, they don't need a box, but it needs to be approved by the ESSC. The tax authorized member must determine which role players for their release event must pass a box during the event. The compiling and timely distribution of the written conclusion and operational plan was also the responsibility of the box. Role players in the staff consist of sonic. These officials from the staff Metro Police, the Disaster Management Services, the Private Emergency Medical Services, the Fire Department of the relevant local authority, the National or Provincial Health Department, or a member of the Health Department of the relevant local authority, the local authority's Traffic Department, Private Security Service Provider. Still continuing with the ROC role players, the controlling body, the event organizer, the stadium or venue owner, the safety officer, three person room, the safety and security planning committee, and the next three person room, their ROC commander, authorizes to invite. The ROC commander is a, must be an experienced staff official, minimum rank of captain, and he or she must ensure that a proper written ROC plan place for an event. Remember, there are two plans in terms of this year both. You have the ROC plan, then you have the event safety and security planning committee. You can also draft a safety and security plan. So, and then also a plan for a higher risk event is then approved by the National Commissioner. This is the and then the seed high risk event plan is then distributed before of the ROC role play stop. So that event within a certain specified time frame in order for them to acquaint themselves with the situation. The entire ROC looks like the picture. I think this is the ROC that has to take in touch with. This is that new cricket stadium. Likewise, then we have a provision in the whole dealing with accreditation, honorable chair, and honorable members, and access to the major field. A controlling body, the organizer, and for a report, a stadium, or any owner, in consultation with the independent security planning committee, late. To control access to the related area within the stadium, bring it along the route. A clear in person is a participant, official, person who provides the logistical support, emergency and essential service officials, police officials, security officers, host stadium or venue employee, contractor or subcontractor. Steward. Can you use the word steward, not a marshal? Health officials invited a very important person, event sponsor representative, media representative, official event broadcaster representative, volunteer, mock representative, a vendor, and all a person required to provide a support function in terms of the security threat. So, you need to accredit all those people to ensure that they are proper risk to allow proper access and control matters. This is a secret ball to the major theory. Yes, it is. I should copy the head of 3D sense. But you have to clearly identify access by a certification card only. Access control officer may refuse access to the major area. Control officer may remove a person from the humanitarian in the first five. Then you move on to the event security. In terms of the ticket phone form, a person may be required to purchase a ticket for an event. Access to an event may only be gained by a valid ticket. There should be a day or a time on the ticket. Or within written or with written permission of an event organizer, stadium, or venue owner. The total ticket sold for an event may not exceed the certified space capacity of that station. And that is one of the problems of the first part of the going to come. Ticket sales at Stadium Avenue, they can be.
Thanks, Chairperson. Sorry, Gideon, I wish you'd tell the airlines to do that because I see they overbook their flights pretty often, so I wish they'd.
Ticket sales at Stadium Avenue may be prohibited on the day of the event, not later than the 14th, and once you have seen that on the stadium or venue. Ticket counting is prohibited. Prohibition particularly here, and which will be amplified in the proposed draft regulation. Then we have a section dealing with spectator and vehicle access. A controlling body of event organizer or the same venue owner may appoint an accredited access control officer. As the following sounds. Again, this comes from the 2010 legislation, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Lawful search and screening of any person's vehicle entering the stadium, venue, or other designated area. Lawful seizure of prohibited security items. Use of electronic search screening equipment. Failure to abide by the lawful directives of an access control officer or to unlawfully enter the designated area constitutes. Then we have our famous spectator exclusion notice, like the keep on sale incident previously referred to you. If the event taking security planning committee authorizes the staff members or the top commander has reasonable grounds to believe that there is a threat that the attendance of one person or a group of persons. That is ultimately the corruption of the event caused injury or damage to the property person. The staff member of Rock Mountain may be issued a state exclusion notice. Now, if taking cognizance of international standards and guidelines will be applied, therefore, it may be prescribed
to a person, Gideon, to keep on this direction with the consent. But now, how do you know? And how do I know that Mr. Consell never did it any more matters? And how will we make sure that we will make this mention from the end of it? Because I think he was banned from Rajasthan, attending Rabbi Nagar, the person. He was banned for life, but I'm telling you, as I said here, Mr. Consell has did it. Everybody stood up with you. That's how that is my position here.
Yep, thank you. Say if I may respond, we will normally make use of our intelligence practice to set up the type of thing. Mr. Fontana has fortunately not been a threat to, I think, properly in government or so, but I'm sure that he actually has a famous matter. But this provision is also aimed at excluding. Your typical soccer music and some thing that we do not know in South Africa, but we don't know about it. But especially with international events, so that we are able to detect the effect
citizens from our counterparts in other countries. We're still agreeing at the moment with the UK also. So we can exclude those people specifically. And I think this is also, this illustrates the importance of the secret accounting service, because the reason why I obtain the secret is that there are other means and the service in that. But this will largely depend on the type of risk that the person is holding and also the intelligence that they have.
If I might just amplify on that particular, firstly, the use of surveillance technology can be used to identify a person who has been whoever and accused of that has been passed with them. You also look at the English model that you put all around in England, that at the access control point, there are actually photographs of people with regard to that particular ground that have the seclusion orders that have been passed. With respect to this. And as we move forward with technology with face recognition software, which is used already in our country and our airports, but as it becomes more available, will be built into the actual surveillance systems as well to pick up people as they approach the facility, not even when they're inside the facility. Thank you, Chair.
Any further questions?
Thank you, Chair.
Also, we make a reason that the national standards or guidelines in respect of expecting may be prescribed and should be taken into account in deciding whether the attendance of a person or group of persons at a base is regarded as undesirable or not. This is the ugly place of the Africa rugby spectator in the union. Call that season for the stadium, and season for the Scottish Irish Irish. The attack that you recall by the FIFA term or Aria speaking from Flint. That is real bad. So this is a national embarrassment for Chairperson and honorable members, and it's an unprecedented attack of the international rugby institution by an African state. And as a matter of fact, I think it's still under discussion recently. You made aware that, you know, people are still referring to the people abroad. So we need to help deal with, for once and for all, for having this call in place and enforcing the people that make the example of people like this, we also create a good solid type of strategy to deter offenses. Also, in conjunction with that, you have severe penalties and also a useful role to deter people actively. As a rugby game, it is allowed that the people go to judge. Because at that point, in football games, as soon as you come through the net, you are drunk, they're not allowed to go to that. So I presume that the speech for the state is a black and brown man. So, what is the setup there? I'm not very sure, but with soccer, as soon as they see you going up and down, you almost. And with rugby, I can see that in the tradition. And we see a lot of vulnerable, bright, and black and drinking there. Then people walk into the stadium there. That is why there are such things. In football, those things are not allowed. You can't go and have black and vulnerable from there, you drink five bottles of the trade, 750 milliliters, then walk into the stadium. They will not allow you to do it. So let's check how are they managing that, how are they doing it. But I'm telling you, really, if you get somebody drunk in a football game, very bad. Then in rugby, I see even the tradition to drink on the street there. There's somebody coming with a big trolley there, and they open up there, they drink like nobody. It's not allowed.
Taking your point one step further, could you imagine trying to evacuate a stadium with say he was full of intoxicated drug reports.
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Really, I think it becomes a tradition when it comes to rugby. And this, I think, that looks like a coke or a tin of beer. Something that you pull with the car, with the shape of a tin of beer. They open and drink it. It's something, from there they had a fry, and then you come earlier. Sit there, have a fry, and drink. From there they walk into the city. It's a hell of a risk. In an event, there should be any other problem. Because all of them, they can't run, they jump off. But I think we must look into that. It's something that can cause problems for us at the time of evacuation. They will kill us. Okay, Peter, let's go. Number of events are hosted on the same day in the specific area. An authorized staff member has reason to believe that the police will not be able to provide adequate information at such events. The chief staff member must notify the relevant authorities or the organizer explaining to any of them as the case may be, and then also take such reasonable steps, including negotiating. If any person can mitigate the possibility, the possible lack, ensure the perception of persons of property and that. Then we are moving on towards the section dealing with the fumes and the fuel board. The draft law provides for a fair administrative of the law for people and process. Relative to the prosecution of fuel by persons in actual services, you are agreed by the administrator's decision to take the act. Amongst others, these include this categorization of an event, issuing of any category of safety certificate, the administrator's amendment to the risk that categorization, mitigation, and any category of safety. Also the issuing of the prohibition notice and the issuing of the state exclusion. Check us in the next slide.
Can I be clarified about this acting part? How will this acting be constituted and who's responsible for that?
I think what's coming next.
In terms of the acts chairperson, it will constitute five members, appointed for 2 years by the minister, but the minister will receive a list of five members to be nominated by the National Commission, of which the minister then appoints 2 of those members. We have sufficient experience and knowledge pertaining to safety and security. And at least one of the 5 members, this actually speaks to our previous interface as well. I said a legal background. At least one of the 5 has a legal background. The board is established by the minister. And the National Commissioner
been appointed by the Minister of Police. Yeah, why should they be nominated by him?
Sorry, this is the Minister of Sports and Recreation.
Nominated by him.
He appointed the Minister of Sports and Recreation, which is actually his responsibility to oversee and act on the field.
Okay. Tuka and Nicole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to say, well, on that board, I've been bringing along on board also doing so that the emphasis is not only the academic, because you might find that people of sports, some of them have got the experience, a lot of experience in terms of coming to the sport as well, without the necessary qualifications in terms of, so I just want to talk on that. Is there any way of being on board with the disadvantaged community at the end of the year? And that thing was pointed at the person who has been in boxing for many years. And not necessarily all the boxing about it. They've run that successfully. And with that wealth of experience, one would need to touch, to see Georgia. I'm not exactly an example of the boxing side.
You see, my question is the nomination from the commissioner to the minister. Where is the role of this committee in that appointment? Because this committee has got a role of oversight over the minister. Should the minister then not be in a position to deal with that board, where does this committee come in?
Let me deepen your question.
See, this nomination of five members might not be a problem, but you have not created a space where, in an event, this appeal board is dysfunctional, how do you dissolve it? Because you remember the event of Boxing South Africa and the SAE. You have only created an establishment. You have not created a disestablishment in an event. This gets ineffective. But I think the other members are raising a very pertinent point around that appeal board helps to brief Parliament on the nature of the appeals that they are handling, for the committee of Parliament most likely to request for an amendment either to strengthen the bill or to do any other thing, because it depends what kind of problems that they face. And the third point is what you and I have agreed today, your case. He said, yeah, we don't need a lawyer that has 5 years. We don't need that kind of lawyer. We need a person who's a lawyer who's qualified, at least who can have 2 years of practice. But 5 years is what you do with 5 years of people that are just going to deal with this kind of a chemical way of dealing with this point. And you and I, in the special measures case, agree that it should be 2 years, not 5 years. And today, I am still persuading you that I do not want 5 years. Yes.
Yes, sir. What he's saying is that the minister will be appointed for 2 years only, but they need the requirement. They should have specialized knowledge relating to safety and security.
Yeah, well,
which now, when it comes to the legal person appointed, that person didn't say how many years.
Sorry. When you go and check on page 17 of that act, it says the minister must appoint at least two of other members referred to in subsection 2 from a written list of at least 5 persons recommended by the National Commissioner. At least one member appointed by the minister must be admitted a practicing attorney or advocate with at least 5 years. I'm saying 5 years, it is not correct. 5 years. I'm saying let us bring down that 5 years to 2 years at least. Because first year, at least beginning to understand all the legal jargon and the protocol and the convention and all that, the second year is ready. And it is another level again of grooming these young boys, not on the major things that are likely to create problems for them, but at least it's where you're beginning to assimilate them to the nature of challenges that are going to face them in the legal process. I think 2 years is better.
You see, to me, this issue of the acting board, I think we must move from the correct policy from the word go. I don't want us to land in an issue like SAFA, where you get an owner of a club being on an appeal board. Here's an appeal which has been brought in. The owner of the club is part of the appeal. He's definitely going to deal with that in the favor of the club.
In fact, he's presiding on the appeal.
He's presiding on the appeal.
Completely.
So that's why I'm really concerned about this appeal board. And I want to be explained clearly, because at the end of the day, the chairman says that we need to play a role as this committee on this appeal board. Yes.
And if we're dealing with anybody else, it should be a person who has no relation with organizers of those events. Because Sigurd likes me, and then I've organized events, and this letter goes to Sigurd, he's my friend, and then in a way, he's working with me, and then he's sharing that appeal board, and then I'm going to be scot free those things. So those are some of the things that practically happen in life and all. But the other little problem is just that the disease is not changing. You see, this tendency of making ministers sit in an office and accept the nomination and decide alone on those things when kids are down, nothing that he can do about that. It's wrong. In boxing nominations, those nominations are sent to the minister. The minister appoints those people. And they are expecting us, the boxing South African board, to account to Parliament when we have nothing to do with boxing South Africa. If boxing South Africa, those 10 people, the minister himself nominates 5, and the other 5 is nominated by the committee and go through all these other processes, then it was a difference. It would carry the same responsibility. But now, we are given the responsibility which is not ours. We are given a board that has to account for us, of people who are completely, all of them, useless. And what do you say? Because they're appointed by the minister. But the minister wants us to be part of him getting those kind of people that have no clue of what is happening. It is not right. And now, the minister will appoint these 5 members. And those 5 members, one way or another, I can tell you now, one way or another, because another thing that is going on here is that the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Sport have to determine their remuneration for them sitting in dealing with those appeals. And that warrants a committee for Parliament to do in interaction with those people about the time that they sit and all those other things, finally is going to land up with us here. You know what? Now, we have a responsibility of the board appointed by the minister in his own office alone, and then we carry that responsibility. I think the time has come for us not to carry anybody's responsibility. If the minister appoints this board, it must be his entire responsibility. It must not be our own responsibility. When he wants to dissolve the board, and then he can't dissolve the board. He can't dissolve the board now. Of boxing South Africa, they can't dissolve the board now. Because we have created a dispensation to establish. But to disestablish when this entity is dysfunctional, you can't do that. And therefore, this one we are pleading as a committee that please create a dispensation where the appeal board is non-functional, and then we must get another appeal board there. But what is the quorum of this appeal board? What is the quorum of this appeal board for this appeal board to be able to take decisions? Because if you say it's 5 people, in an event 3 of the people are not there, are these 2 correctly taking a decision on behalf of those that are not there? But if you say no, I'm saying no, it is not clarified yet that that appeal board will only decision, will take a decision by quorum. It is quiet, just 5. but it must be saying five, and by a quorum it should be two, or by a quorum it should be three, and therefore that decision taken at that quorum becomes a binding decision. But that has to be required, and it's going to create problems. I can do that. Kirion, in the meantime, God, our chair, I want you to raise your views on the
Yeah, we don't want to ask you things. We want everything to be there, things right? So that when really say that we can do things, then it's 100%. Thank you.
So thank you, sir. Surely, point taken. We should include the quorum aspect. We have certainly been avoided from the specific thing. Actually, as a matter of fact, and obviously, yes, the 2 years I agree with you, it's very my mission. I find dependent on my memory and memory of it. It is actually 2 years, should be 2 years, and not just 5 years. So, in fact, I think it's just and yes, and I would say,
can I just ask this one?
Yes.
On the issue of the tax, can it be extended or removed after that two years?
Now there is a provision that person can be renominated.
Okay.
Continue or I will prove. My document is inconclusive
and have been discussed by the OK. So, if you have a question, answer the role of the committee. At what stage do you come in?
Yes, I think it's still outstanding.
Because my case was that we have all the limits, but not necessarily the limits of 4%, but it's out of experience from other departments also. And then that question, still in the sense, what role is the committee going to play in the whole process? And also, we have not spoken on the system of the process. Yes, we agree on the process.
As a matter of fact, you know,
Let me comment one or two things here. This SADDT
it had to come back to Parliament because it was a very painful thing where there was a board which can't be dissolved. There had to be an amendment which was done recently so that it can be. So we don't want to have a situation in this one so that we must first encounter problems and then come and look at it. How are you going to dissolve it? So we said from the West Group, it must be created so that it is there.
I think on the establishment of the board, we need to come up with a new system. Because if we give the minister the power to appoint a board by himself or herself, it creates problems. Because sometimes he can appoint people who, within 3 months or a year, become the commissioner. Therefore, we need to come up with a system that we intended to use when we try to amend the voting protocol. And therefore, in that sense, what I try to say here is that when we create this, we need to create the manner in which the appointment is supposed to go. And these people may not just be nominated, but they must appear within a community for if they are in an interdiction, where they can take care of their position and everything. I think that's what we need to come up with regard to this of the appointment of the board. And after those people, the minister may get the recommendation of those people and submit the recommendation, maybe to a portfolio committee for the approval.
I'll give over to the senator. I see you in power now.
You see, we are taking from the same very thing. We say that we must create those things now so that when we say Amen, it is there. Let me take over again.
Thank you. Now, when I walked in there, you said that nothing works as a procedure for the boss or any other. It is only in sports and recreation where it is different. And it's creating problems. Honestly, it's creating problems. I want to tell you what. Now, the number of fights is right because you don't make an even number so that it gives you a space. But you are absolutely right. If we have to create this board, there should be this thing published for any other person to come and then explain so that we participate, all of us. And the minister can do whatever he wants to do. Like him. If there's, I will propose that there should be 7 people there. And then 4, they must be appointed through the portfolio committee, interview and interaction. The 3, minister can take any other person that he so wishes to do. And then when the recommendation of the 4 that is been sent to the minister in the act, you must say, the minister has the right to appoint a chair of that committee. We must not prescribe for him who's supposed to chair that committee. But he will chair that, Stefan will chair that committee in line to what Fidion is saying, what should be the expertise of a person who's going to chair that committee. Then it means all of us have a responsibility because in an event there is 7-member committee and then finally there remain 3. Then the minister is in a position to say, I am making a recommendation to the committee to agree with us and dissolve the board. Then the board is dissolved. And then there is no problem. But for now, the lawyer is right. You can't do that when you have not created those enabling clauses there for you to be able to go out of them. 5 is okay, but 5 is... How many do you give to the minister to do? Two. It can't be 2. At least if they are 7, it's okay. Then the 4 must go through any other board process naturally. And the 3, the minister can get any other person that he knows that is going to enrich the board. And then the quorum for that board should be 3. Because know that if you say 4, you're killing the committee. You're completely killing it. If it is 3, the quorum must take a decision. 4 is a bonus. 5, there will never be 5, any time I can tell you. will never be fired at any given time. So then that's how we should do it. Then the minister must be given the right to choose the chair in the whole seven of the people that are there. I don't know whether it is. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
They do.
They do. Yeah. You understand the question?
Yeah, I
yes. So that's what I was trying to put forward and propose. But somewhere, Gideon must be able to say, in an event a board is dysfunctional, then the minister should disestablish the board and put an interim board, if that is the case, and then what is a period for the interim board and call for proper nomination and have the full board in the run. Then it means in that way we've closed everything rather than we must be in the limbo because we could not put up a safety valve for the deal. So just go and see what can you do on that, and then I think members are going to be comfortable with it.
Thank you, Chairperson. And the board members, we look forward to the prohibition of the business review at the end. There's another thing, 6 lines to go. The draft law provides for the issuing of official notices prohibiting or restricting events in certain circumstances. It is in this speech the decision makers, either the national commissioner or the authorized member, the event safety security planning committee will adopt the conduct. Now you might ask, what are the relevant circumstances that will have to be taken into account for this event? It boils down to the fact that there must be a serious risk to this event. A practical example in this regard connects to our economy. Unsafe temporary grandstand, ticket selling irregularities, power outages, state intelligence information regarding planned disruption to an act of terror. We've also included the provision for lodging appeals to the High Court. Then we've dealt with public liability insurance. The goal is to take the strong body event organizer or a training or venue owner are jointly and separately responsible to ensure that sufficient public liability insurance cover is in place for
the just a moment, can we make sure that public liability insurance is done by an approved FDIC company? In other words, the bank can use some fly-by-night out there, will give some very cheap rates. We want to make sure it's a reputable company that's acceptable.
That's a point taken. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Didn't we have a provision dealing with fees? The draft holding village, the raising of fees to assist with the required funding to actually extend the bill once longer. For instance, state certificates will be accompanied by fees. So there will be a certain income generated in terms of the people of the board. If we have a division dealing with penalties devised for
what are you talking about when you're talking about the fees?
Talking about speaking to the issuing of safety certificates. Once you apply for the amendment of the certificate, that might also have an impact.
Is that going to fall within the regulations or
it will be in terms of the regulations, it will be in terms of the
cut. What amount do you have in your mind? Which is the standard amount of money for any other similar way, anywhere else, for fees?
You haven't actually given the court
okay.
Per se at the moment.
That's okay. Let's go.
Think we move on to offending the penalty. The law provides for a proposed maximum penalty for contravention of the act, which is either a fine or imprisonment, not exceeding 10 years, or both such fine and imprisonment.
million there. He said a draft bill provides for proposed maximum penalty for contravention of the act. What is that maximum penalty? The other alternative you reflect here, that is it is 10 years. But the other one is not the same. Fine or imprisonment. But he doesn't tell us what is a fine. But he's telling us what is the imprisonment. I'm saying, but yet there is inconsistency. You must tell us that it's 5 months or 5 years. Or both of them can be applicable. Here you only talk about a 10 year imprisonment or both of the fine. But you don't tell us what is the other fine. We want to know what is the other fine. That is equal to 10 years.
Euros or dollars?
A fine to the is in rent, usually determined by the minister from time to time. The court says for any person found in drunken driving, the penalty is 50,000. Let me just tell you, only somewhere where I see a penalty is 1 million. Penalty. I'll tell you what it's like. Or is this price fixing of this? It's 1 million. Price. The penalty, 1 million. Or alternatively 25 years. But they are stating now in the administrative justice, when you administer that, you are not going to be rigid on the 1 million. You are going to move between 1 to 1 million. And therefore, you can say half a million, 750,000, and all that. You are not prescribed by anybody. It's up to you. And even when you are having a fine, when I go home and they go to Lane and cross over the steeplet there on the road. On my way home, and then I go in there and say to people sitting there, no, I don't have 500 grand. I said that, no, the maximum is 500 grand. I said that, I don't have 500 grand. How much do you have? I said, I have 250. Then they said, okay, 250. But that price, the penalty, is from 1 to 500 grand. Whatever they give me in between, it's not a matter. That's what I'm saying to him. He must explain to us the other part. Yes, sir.
Possible to my lead coming to this. I sat with a situation last year, also with legislation. The Appropriation of Fines Act provides for the Minister of Justice to take certain fines from time to time. And this is to be the situation like they had to the previous second and good act. There's a maximum penalty in the Sound Act. Now in 1955, that was a lot of money, but now the pawn shop overpays that out of his back pocket. So, this Appropriation of Fines Act on the right provision for the minister to sort of keep pace with inflation, and in terms of this act, then they can take a high fine, but the people in the 10 years of
the open ended of it. As and when time goes on, it lets you able to adjust to conform to that.
That is correct. In fact, it will not be opening it because there will be a maximum fine in terms of this Appropriation of Fines Act. Unfortunately, it's in another act, but at least it's across the board for all these things.
You win.
How did you understand this?
Why do you say 10 years and then you don't say 5 years in prison?
Honorable chair members, once again, I think that this 10 years, this is the court an idea on how serious Parliament regards this offense to be. That this committee decides that the offense isn't serious. You can make it 1 year.
No, no, no.
The 10 years is a court indication of how serious Parliament regards the crime. I think in this case, it can't be less than 10 years.
Yeah, but I'm saying you're still even in court enough to indicate to the magistrate what should be the amount of penalty that we want him to impose on the people. With the same breath that we're showing how serious we are for 10 years, we can also show him how serious we are with monetary penalty.
Perhaps the compromise would be then to set the amount, whatever, and then make reference to the legislation for future judgments, given the seriousness of the subject matter itself.
And
what
is
I think the for the sake of consistency, we should give it to the adjustment of probation to review the determination of the by the minister. But we would have now this act, which is very important in providing for the resource. So it's going to create confusion, because now we have one act that provides differently from all the other acts. All fundamentals that has increased consistency for us. And we decided to look at the maximum amount of penalty that they have been given in this many years of helping the city and an option of the fight for now. Even in this amount of years, they can be given an option of so for the sake of consistency.
You remember last year I promised you that I would never be a lawyer. You remember I promised you that? I still give you a guarantee today that I would rather be anything different than a lawyer. But to the specialist, there is not an instant, but I can't understand how they are thinking on earth. I can't understand.
Yeah, you see, that's why I was saying we are not contemplating. No, I would say we should support. But it's not a question to ask the question of using the 10 years out in America. And there is a thing in terms of the daily mantra. So we can add that making the penalty to say we don't have one. Because I thought that maybe the 10 years would have been formed by a particular thing in the day that I have 10 years, but not 5 years. The seriousness of this, as you see now, it starts from 10 years and upwards. But in terms of monetary, we have to consult another act so that we are consistent.
Okay,
Hidden,
fine.
Yeah. I will do it.
The second bullet on this slide provides a growing text to the behavior entering of the debated area without trial or probation, stealthing unauthorized identity of provoking, breaching of investigative positions, and prevention of expected exclusion notice, contravention of prohibition, failure to put public liability insurance, failure to comply with lawful directives against that security role player, influence to secure instruction. Commanded, carrying out the road duties, the unauthorized throwing, kicking, copying, hitting, any of their activities, the unauthorized destruction of property, England's antisocial behavior, including racist, vulgar, inflammatory, incendiary, and our obscene acts.
Are you saying failure to put public liability insurance in place and there are 43 people who have died in the stadium is equal to NEF or any other amount of fine that might be determined by the Minister of Justice. Is that what you're saying?
Definitely what we're saying, because depending on the seriousness of the particular contravention, perhaps the past history of this particular offender, that can actually accumulate. So yes, we're saying it can relate to that.
I'm saying 43 people. Mm-hmm. And even if you take 1% 1 year, 43 people died, and there is no public liability insurance, it means you have only catered for 1,000 for a person, only for those 10,000. The rest of other people, their life has gone just free because we put this cap for ourselves. Because the act there says not exceeding 10 years. And the most seriousness of this thing is that this person deliberately or otherwise decided not to put a liability insurance. And 43 people died. And we're saying 43 people are equal to 10,000 to 10 years. It's not really a fair a justifiable way of dealing with it. I do not think it's fair. If you were saying a fine of imprisonment more than 10 years, which it can be more than 10 years, I would understand what you're saying. But if you're saying not exceeding 10 years, when there are so many lives that have been lost, in Orkney, 47 or 40 something people died. In Ellis Park, 42 died. And anywhere else, if this could happen, it's likely again to be 50 or something, and then we say, in that 50, when a person knowingly in organizing the event, that there should be a public liability insurance, and then said to him, no, he just any other amount fine and or not exceeding 10 years. We say, if it was saying 10 years upwards, it's a different story. But I need to be because I'm not hard up on this thing, but I'm just showing you that yes, we've looked very little to the loss of life, and our experience and the examples that have been going on in the country here, not only 3 people died in this instance. There are more than 50 people, 40 people who died. So in another event, we are likely to get 50 people died in this event, and we equate 50 people to 10 years. That is what I'm just saying. I don't know. I'm not hard on it, but I'm just raising that question.
Sure. We found what happened now, what you are saying. That's what I'm talking about. Maybe I'll talk about it. Because I was trying to check on the recommendations of the findings of the commissioner. I'm also moving beyond that. What April said, so I remember, I recollect that somebody was found in the community. I think this will want to address also the very public, the cost of this, as we find ourselves in. Because also, you see, in most cases, for instance, on the issue of the light tower, the flag, the combustion flag, is very serious where people are just flying their flags or the national anthem being sung at home. There's no state one said, this is the actual culprit who produced a tape to the sound to sing that national anthem wrongly. It's just to say, the department always says, you know, we're helping somehow. But I think this bill can also assist us in that, to say,
were able to bring down also the persons who caused us some harm as a country, you come and face the consequences of what has happened. I think we need also to move forward on that. I'm not saying down what is raising for 3 to 10 years and so on. But also there are those institutions that we need to hire so that we go up to the actual council and say, here he is. If he needs to come to the public and apologize, he must be able, or she must be able to do that.
Yeah, I think your colleague Sugar has touched on the issue. Because, you know, this thing of the department, each and every time we raise this issue, that they say they've investigated, and we've never had a report that what has happened after the investigation. Assuming the issue of the old flag, it does keep on coming up, and nothing happens. You see, that person of that old flag might one day sit at the wrong place, and then you have a riot. So we need to look into that thing very seriously. And I hope, Christian, that you take this into the budget. But, you know, some of these recommendations which you are making here, I don't think that it's been taken very seriously. We've been calling for the alignment of the constitutions of the federation. Nothing has been happening. And really, one is looking like, as I said yesterday, that when I was watching rugby, they also that some 2 weeks ago, the people asking these questions. But what are you doing at the parliament? You still just see two people of color in 2015. But you are making this law. The implementation of this law is also a shortcoming by the department. Thank you.
Senior. I would agree. I don't know how the experts and yourself and all of you that are subjected. When you talk about a fine or imprisonment not exceeding 10 years, when entering a designated area without prior authorization, I understand. When touting unauthorized event ticket promotion, I understand that. Breaching of event ticket condition, because this is another thing that you see. Contravention of spectator exclusion, I understand that. It's equivalent to what you put up there. But when is that failure to put public liability insurance in place? This failure might cause disastrous consequences in the law. It is not just an ordinary thing. These are, I understand them. I think you and the experts put very well. There is a relationship of that not exceeding 10 years with this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But with the 6, there is no relationship there. Because this person, the public liability insurance, deals with a critical issue which has caused us to put the bill. This bill has been put in place at Vector 2. In fact, the thrust of this bill is the responsibility of these organizers to take full responsibility of this event that they organize. Failure resulting to that must be a huge consequence to those people. But I don't know what they're going to do. But I'm just trying to show you that there is nothing wrong that the experts and yourself and colleagues have done. But when you come to point number 6, I find a huge gap there which doesn't relate to the consequences of failure to get the public liability. Yes,
sorry, Chairperson. I thought the issue of public liability went to the heart of the whole problem. I don't see how any event can take place unless the role player, the venue owner or operator, person who puts on the event, the teams involved, they must provide proof of public liability to this body or to somebody. Without it, you can't have the event.
Yeah, no, you see that what you raised is a very fundamental thing. They might give you a fictitious proof of that. You're right. That's why I'm saying please issue the credible insurance companies and all that. They can give him any other thing. They can give Fidio any other thing, something that is very suspicious, knowing that it's misleading people. And it results to what? To failure to take public liability. And because we might not be knowing the Alex Fox and all those others, Mr. McKenzie, you understand? But you are right. It cannot be organized before you submit that. But they even submit a passport which is completely faulty, which is not that owner's passport. So that is also.
Yeah, but I think, Chairperson, I agree with you that their public liability has to be confirmed by the company involved independently. In other words, this body must confirm that their public liability is in place.
Yes, no, it's, those are some of the other things, right. But I'm just saying, in the face of everything, and then there could be. I can go and take now an insurance company with all Bujo and say deduct it with my bank. And they send it to the contract and everything, and the next day I go to the bank and say, no, stop this thing. They printed a document, they printed everything. Document is coming on the other side. This other side, the payment is not done. It means there's a collapse of that insurance policy in the future. So there are those kinds of things. So we must take what is saying as authentic, credible institutions that are going to give us public liability, but at the same time, we're closing this and say it can't just be this amount because we're trying to make sure that we close everything so that people must see how serious this is. I'm just putting that to you, gentlemen. I'm not very hard on it, but I'll just checking the rating and then all the. I am sure we through. You want to say something?
Well, on the last slide is actually the end of the presentation.
Yes, and it's very well. Yes, and it is very well. Yeah. Simeon and your colleagues, thank you very much. There's been a little bit of a longer time. I was not messaging it, but it's just that today we started on the wrong day of the holiday. So, but thanks that this year is able to speak up until this time we finalize it. And that I think now the bill is now in the hands of the committee, and that the program the committee secretary has issued to honorable members. Tomorrow, honorable members will not meet. All is going to send to you the submissions from the public, and so that you must read those. And then the following day, then we will meet and consider those submissions. And what we are going to do, we are going to decide collectively. If we don't understand those submissions, we will call the authors of those submissions to come and make a live presentation, because the reading might not exactly interrogate and understand what people are saying there. And Gideon is going to be part of this thing. You know, up until April next year, you're going to be without dealing with this thing. And the time that you know that we leave at 1 o'clock in the morning when we are not in the time. So I hope this time we're not going to be at 1 o'clock.